Welcome to Scary Basement. Me and my friend Mikey are still trapped inexplicably and supernaturally in this basement. Well, maybe not so inexplicably, it's all kind of the pig bot's fault. Anyway, in this basement lurks every scary thing that has ever been, including Deathbed, the bed that eats, a reanimated severed head, a toilet from hell, and a party time skeleton with cool shades and a hat on backwards because he knows it's party time somewhere. I'm Roxy Polk.
And I'm Mikey McCollar. Roxy, is it cool if I use your toilet from hell real quick?
It's not my toilet from hell, so go for it.
I'm not gonna risk it. Nothing that I need to protect more than my butt.
Agreed. Maybe choose the toilet from Limbo over there instead of the one from hell. You'll probably have a better time with it.
Yeah, I've never trusted the toilet from Limbo because it feels so indecisive. Like, be in heaven or be in hell. You know what I mean? Limbo is probably my least favorite concept.
Then let's hope you don't end up there, Mikey.
I won't. Especially because I'm never going to die.
I got something to say about it! I'm the big bot and I've got a big chainsaw and I'm gonna mow through all of you!
What if instead of that, we tell you about a horror movie we watched? What about that?
I'm listening!
Okay, cool. Mikey, I watched As Above, So Below this week, did you?
I've seen that movie, yes. Okay, I think we could talk about that.
Okay, hey, Pigbot, how about the movie As Above, So Below from 2014? It's pretty scary.
I'd love to hear about it! I can't go above because of my evil, and I can't go below because I'm afraid! So yeah, that sounds like a good movie to hear about! Tell me who's in it!
Okay, cool.
In As Above, So Below, we're happy to tell you about it, Pigby. First up, we have Scarlet, a young genius scholar searching for the Philosopher's Stone. She's driven to such a degree that she will stop at nothing to find this dang thing, even if people's lives are at risk, including her own.
Then we have George, Scarlet's ex, and still friend, kind of, mostly, who knows Aramaic and can translate and is constantly breaking into old buildings to repair things like broken clock towers.
A character trait that he is introduced with that does not come up for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, they use it to break into one museum and then that's it. Cool hobby guy.
Also along for the ride, we have Benji. He's the cameraman. He's being paid to be here, you have to presume. Benji I like a lot. He's a bit of a coward.
And then we have Papillon, the French team guide, who is a streetwise young dude who knows the catacombs of Paris inside and out.
We have Suxi.
I think it's Suzy. Papillon's
girlfriend? Nope, I don't think so.
Okay, spell Suxi. Spell Suxi. Pronounce Suzy? Suzy?
Suzy. Papillon's girlfriend. Kind of just around. Another body, to be honest with you.
We have Zed, who is Papillon's friend and also just kind of there.
We've got Latop, also Papillon's friend. This dude lived in the catacombs for years. He mysteriously disappeared down an unused tunnel.
And finally, we have Roger Van Hool, who is Scarlet's father, and the impetus for the whole investigation for the Philosopher's Stone. We don't really see him, but he is plot relevant.
All right, I got the characters! What happens in this movie? Tell me!
All right, Mikey, you want to start with the plot summary?
Fair enough. In this movie, we have Scarlet. She is in a cave that's about to be demolished. At the last minute, she finds a rose key, which is the artifact that will lead her to the Philosopher's Stone. Her father was searching for this alchemical?
Yeah.
It's an item that lets you do alchemy. It grants you immortality, can heal any wound, is an instant gold cheat code. It would make you rich forever. Unfortunately, Scarlet's father died before he ever found it. So Scarlet is searching for it now to prove that her father and his research was correct. Roxy, can we talk about the Philosopher's Stone really quick?
Yeah, sure. What do you know about the Philosopher's Stone, Mikey?
Only Harry Potter. And as an American Harry Potter boy, I called it the Sorcerer's Stone the whole time.
Oh, okay. I forgot there's that distinction. It also shows up a lot in the anime Fullmetal Alchemist, which I know famously you will never have watched.
Absolutely not.
But yeah, basically it's something that Nicholas Flamel, an actual alchemist back in the year I can't remember right now, I think 17-something,
2011.
Maybe. Yes, there you go, 2011. Claimed it was a thing that existed that could turn lead to gold, could heal people, could give you immortality, all this stuff. And then he died without anyone knowing where it went or if it was ever real.
So Roxy, just like, cut the shit. Is Nicholas Flamel a real person or what?
He is a real person, yes. He was
okay,
real.
That's cool.
Okay, yeah. Philosopher's Stone, it's unclear, something I know, but that's a question this movie poses, I suppose.
It's something that I always thought was very funny in Harry Potter, that they have like this piece of mythology in the first book, whether the Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone or the Philosopher's Stone, and then the rest of them, they're just, I'm just gonna make up some bullshit. I don't know, the Goblet of Fire. That's not real. That's not a real mythology.
So then you can make up whatever you want for it, I guess.
Yeah. Why do you need to start with a myth? Dumb.
Good question. So in addition to trying to prove her father right, Scarlett is also just very ambitious and driven to want to find it for herself as well. So much so, in fact, that she goes after her ex, George, to get his help with the translation of this thing that she needs, and to enlist him in general for her quest for the stone. She also gets cameraman Benji in on it, and the trio set out on their journey.
They break into a museum after hours and decipher a clue on Nicholas Flamel's tombstone, the man who supposedly made the stone in the first place. They use some alchemy to unearth the clue, which gives them coordinates to the Paris catacombs. This is where we find out Scarlett has boundary issues.
Oh, yeah. She is. And that she has none.
Pushing hard. She goes like, oh, I'll bet we can pick up this tombstone off of a museum. And he's like, no, we're at a museum.
And she literally,
George is
like
level-headed.
Yeah, she like pulls it off the wall, puts it down face down, gets some cleaning supplies, and then lights a fire on top of it to unearth a clue, which is very cool. But also, what the fuck are you doing? George also, we'll go into this sort of later, but like, he doesn't want to go with Scarlett because she roped him into something that got him imprisoned. They were on some sort of history mission before, I guess, where something went wrong. He went to jail, she didn't, and she left him there, did not save him. And I think they were dating at the time, too, so like, what the fuck, man? I'd be mad,
Real
too.
Real quick, Roxy, did this movie remind you of any video games?
I guess, kind of. It's sort of what made me think of something for my palate cleanser. But it has, like, some Resident Evil kind of style puzzles.
This is Tomb Raider the movie.
Tomb Raider!
This movie is Tomb Raider the movie. We have a British lady who is following her father's madness into finding this artifact. There's supernatural shit. This is the best Tomb Raider movie anyone's ever made.
Damn, dude, you are 110% correct. I never played the Tomb Raider movie, so it didn't come to mind. But, like, yeah, 110%, you are right. She's also, like, rich, as far as we know, I think, too.
She's rich.
She's also extremely, like, she lists all these different things she can do. She can beat people up. She's also really smart. She's got, like, a doctorate and a bunch of all these other things, even though she's super young. Yeah, she could kick butt like Lara Croft. They'd be hanging.
Kind of rules. So, we've got Scarlett, George, Benji. They're using alchemy to unearth the clue, which gives them coordinates to the Paris catacombs. This is the resting place of millions of human skeletons. I believe it was Louis XIV who was just throwing bodies down into the ground.
Too many to bury above ground, so you just bury them in pits below ground.
It's good problem solving, which is what you need in a leader. It's thousands of miles of mapped and unmapped tunnels that snake around the Paris underground, and that is where Scarlett believes she'll find the Sorcerer's Stone.
On a legit normal tour of the catacombs, a mysterious stranger tells Scarlett to search for a man at a club. His name is Papillon, and he will guide them. And then this person disappears. They decide to go for it, because why not? The trio go there, they find Papillon, they find his girlfriend Susie, and his other friend Zed. Scarlett lies to them, however, tells them that there's a big old treasure down there, but they just don't know how to get to it and need a guide. Which, I mean, it's kind of true, but it's not really a treasure you can sell. It's not like gold and shit.
Yeah, it's like friendship.
Yeah.
The treasure is the friends you made along the way.
Truly. With the promise of riches and adventure, it convinces Papillon and his crew to join them, so now they're a team of six.
Of course, George doesn't want to get caught up in another one of Scarlett's schemes, because last time, he went to jail. She abandoned him. It led to their breakup. It was tough. When George tries to leave this Paris catacombs mission, the cops find the group sneaking into the catacombs and try to stop them. They all run. This causes George to be like, well, I can't get arrested. I gotta just go deeper into the catacombs. He joins all of them. George is on this mission whether he wants to be or not.
This is where the Dante's Inferno Circles of Hell journey truly begins. They encounter singing female cultists and a strange ghostly woman that they had seen before but can't quite place. They go through a narrow tunnel that collapses and ends up trapping them. They're forced to go one of two different ways, one of which was blocked off after Papillon's friend Latop disappeared through it.
Oh, I miss Latop. He's not appearing in this movie yet. The the group tries to go the safe way, but end up right back where they started. And yet things are strangely mirrored. With nowhere else to go, they are forced to bust down the block in the way of the tunnel and go through it. Once they do, who do they find but Latop? I was missing, and now he's here.
Congrats.
Somehow he's alive, but he's acting very weird and tells them that the only way out is down, that they have to keep going. Roxy, this is a big, like, guys, don't trust this dude. Like,
yeah.
What are you doing?
His eyes are, like, overly dilated. Like, I think they might have even been all black or something. He's, like, standing all weird, not acting like a normal human at all. Which, maybe that's just how this guy was, though. I don't know. Only Papillon and his friends know.
That's a great point.
He maybe might have been a creature weird before. Dude. It was always like this.
The eyes growing dark and big was actually the thing that I was like, okay, maybe you could trust him for that, because it is how he would have adapted to being in the dark for that long. Like, his pupils would have grown.
He becomes like a Gollum man, like in the first movie we ever, or no, second movie we ever reviewed on this podcast, which was The Descent. He becomes a Gollum man.
A lot of Descent parallels in this movie. I think we get a lot of crawling on the stomach, I'm nervous. Can
literally
we talk
descending.
About this really quick?
Uh-huh. What?
I don't think I'm as afraid of the claustrophobic spaces as a lot of people are. I feel like a lot of people have said about this movie and about The Descent, they're like, it's just too horrifying to be in this teeny tiny little space and I can't make it happen. And I was like, I don't know, you just keep crawling.
So to be there underground, that's very much one of my fears, and it's probably why movies like this and The Descent get to me. Because, like, being trapped underground where nobody knows where you are and nobody can help you, that is terrifying. If I was like... I don't know, trapped in a busy office building and just waiting for someone to come get me. That's fine. I can deal with that. I know there's an end to that. This thing, no, you just die and nobody knows what happened to you. And you're just there forever, starving to death or asphyxiating or being crushed or who knows what.
Sounds like I'm braver than you.
I guess so. However, this crew is able to use some puzzle-solving skills to solve a riddle on a wall. And by doing that, they find a secret chamber with a strangely preserved Templar knight in full armor.
Cool.
In another room past him, there is a mountain of treasure. Papillon and his friends are super happy with that loot, but Scarlet and her crew are only focused on a red stone in a relief on the wall. It's the Philosopher's Stone! They found it, Mikey.
No, it's the Sorcerer's Stone. Taking the stone is okay. But taking the treasure triggers a trap, which causes the room to collapse. And
much like Aladdin.
Disappeared.
I just realized.
It's very Aladdin, isn't it? Also,
Abu, don't take the big stone.
This bothered me in that they take the treasure, the room collapses, nobody dies.
The top like the disappears. Worst. They can't find him. They're like, oh no, he's buried under there. But
I guess they do that. Susie's arm is hurt. But Scarlet heals her injury with the stone, proving that, hey, this Sorcerer's Stone, it works.
They then find the words, as above, so below. Hey, they said the name of the movie, Mikey. They find it written above a hidden doorway on the floor. As they proceed through it, they find a tunnel, which then has an additional phrase. Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. But it's in Greek, which they're able to translate.
Uh-huh.
And this line is from the entrance to hell in the story Dante's Inferno, solidifying that they are indeed in some place not of this world now.
Can we just talk about abandon all hope, ye who enter here? They have this moment where they're like, that's the inscription above the gates of hell. And I was like, you didn't need to say that. It's already very ominous. Even if somebody just thought of that phrase, that would be a scary thing to write anywhere.
But now, not only is it scary, it's also scary because hell. Hell is
scary. Yeah, it's a reference. Like, okay, great. When the group enters the next room, they're in an upside-down reflection of the last room. And for some reason, Latope is there. He's just around. He activates Roxy.
Yeah.
He's just kind of like, he's like sitting still and they shine a flashlight on him and he launches into fury. He gives Susie what, in pro wrestling parlance, I believe the move was called the Baldo Bomb.
Oh my god. Okay, you're going to need to describe this for me and everyone here who does not know wrestling moves. What is the Baldo bomb? It sounds terrifying.
The wrestler Albert, I believe, used to do it. It's where you, like, grab somebody by the throat with two hands and lift them up and slam them onto the ground.
Oh my god!
And he beats the shit out of Tsuji. She dies. She's a dead person. They can't use a stone to resurrect a dead person, which got me into a lot of, like, so if you survive an encounter, the stone can heal you. But if your heart stops beating, then there's nothing it can do.
Apparently, yeah. That seems to be how it works, yeah. So it can't bring back the dead, but it can heal every wound. And it can make you immortal, but you have to be immortal first, I think, before something tries to kill you.
So maybe I was trying to figure out how Nicholas Flamel would have died if he was using this. And I think I kind of like the idea that, like, it makes you immortal to, like, the ravages of time. But it doesn't necessarily make you immortal in that, like, if your brain is severed from your spine, you keep going.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I had as well. Like, the old Templar corpse we see in there, is that supposed to be Nicholas Flamel or not? I was not sure. Because he has a tombstone up above ground, which is where they did the puzzle to get here.
Well, they famously said they didn't find his body when they dug it up.
Okay, yeah. So it's assumed that that's supposed to be him down there, right? He's the corpse.
And I think there's two of him. I think there's a reflected version of him. There's one that's not decaying, and then there's one that is, which I thought was cool and scary. So the group makes it to a deep drop that they must descend. Everyone makes it down safely except for Benji, who is pushed to his death by the ghostly mystery woman. It's one of many moments where Benji's like, I don't want to go down here.
Yeah, but they make him and then that happens.
I will also say this scene is when I notice that the actor playing Benji is a really bad actor. Like, way worse than everybody else in the movie. He's just like, hello? Who's there? Is there anyone? It's really bad. And then he does the thing where, like, from his perspective, we switch to his camera and he's looking around. And then we get a jump scare. A ghostly woman pushes him. And he just crumbles.
Oh, yeah. This is something I haven't talked about that I should have set up at the top of this movie. But this is a found footage movie as well. We're doing two found footage movies in a row.
I love found footage movies.
Two cameras? A single camera? I think there might be two cameras. But yeah.
There's three.
Three? Okay.
I think maybe more.
Papillon has one, Scarlett has one, and Benji has one, right? Is that it? Or
I think so. Yeah, we are definitely, like, cutting between the cameras that these people all have on their foreheads. So we're seeing everybody. We're getting camera transitions. There's at least three. There might be four. It's Benji, George, Scarlett, and I think Zed.
Oh, Zed has one.
I think so.
Okay.
And that's a weird one because of, for reasons we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Benji, pushed to death by a mysterious ghost woman, Papillon sees a burning car with his brother dying inside. Oh, I guess we'll talk about it now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Papillon sees a burning car, his brother is inside, dying in said burning car. This is a scene that happened in Papillon's past. He refuses to take responsibility for his role in his brother's death and is therefore killed when he is supernaturally sucked into the burning car. When the dust settles, there's no burning car. Just Papillon buried in the floor with only his feet visible. This guy's dead, folks. It's very much like a black hole, like, sucks up the car.
Yeah.
Just like, whoop.
It's like a wild effect that it doesn't really look cheap for what it is either. I think probably, like, the lighting definitely helps because they're in a dark tunnel and there's kind of like one light source. But this thing with just, like, people's feet being the only thing visible of them, they're, like, just planted in the ground like that. That's also from Dante's Inferno, apparently. Like, a direct reference to one of the circles of hell, how people are tortured.
Got it. Because then you get tickled. Then you get your little feet just tickled all the time.
Forever.
A real torture.
Truly. So now there's only three left. We got Scarlett, George, and Zed.
And real quick, that is why I was saying it was so weird that Zed got a camera, but then once it was down to these three, it was only these three who had cameras. Like, these three for sure had cameras.
Or, so like, he picked it up from Benji, who died, I think, so then he had it, maybe?
That could be.
Yeah.
Okay, you're probably right. That makes way more sense. Okay, great. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, okay, everyone's, like, seeing weird shit from the past and things that should not exist down here in the Paris catacombs. Mm. So Scarlett sees a vision of her dead father, who is revealed to have committed suicide, as well as a mysterious ringing phone that she doesn't want to acknowledge. George sees visions of his brother, who drowned before he could save him, and a distinct piano from their childhood with a busted key. And Zed sees a mysterious child who he abandoned. In addition to personal demons, there's just actual demons down here, one of which slashes George's throat and he is slowly bleeding out to death. Scarlet tries to save him with the stone, then realizes that since it's the room they found it in was reversed, the stone they required isn't the real thing. It's fake. And she needs to go get the real one in time to save George. She's on the clock.
Roxy, we gotta talk about this demon.
Which one? The wall
demon? That slashes George. There is, they walk by a stone wall, and a stone demon comes out of the
spooky
wall.
Like, he looks like shrieking.
He looks like he's, like, pressing out of the stone. And as Scarlet speed runs through the entire area to get back to the treasure room, which is exactly how I described it.
Uh-huh.
It is exactly a speed run in a video game where she has to get back. She rocks this stone demon twice. Just, like, a non-issue. She just, like... like, forearm shivers the guy or sticks a camera and he's just like, ah,
hey, she's a trained professional. Oh. She's Lara Croft. George is not Lara Croft. He ain't trained to fight nobody. He gets rocked immediately.
So Scarlet is trying to head back to the Philosopher's Stone, Sorcerer's Stone room. I'm sorry. She encounters rivers of blood, biting faces in the ground. She sees the Templar Knight from before, but now he's rotted and decaying like he should be. Once she replaces the stone, she looks at the inscription and the mirror below it and realizes, hey, maybe I'm the stone.
Stone was in me all along.
Maybe by going to literal hell and back has made me the stone all along. As Scarlet makes her way back to George and Zed, she encounters the apparition of her father. She missed his phone call. That's why we were seeing a phone ringing down in the Paris catacombs. She would have helped him and didn't know he was in so much pain, and she's blamed herself ever since. But here... Scarlet accepts her mistakes and apologizes to her father, making peace with her past and allowing her to move on.
She makes it back in time to save George with her newfound healing powers, and the three of them narrowly escape the demons who are trying to kill them. She then tells the two of them that they too must accept their past as she did in order to leave. George confesses to failing to save his brother and accepting the fact that he was just a kid. There's literally nothing he could have done. He's just carried that with him his whole life. And Zed confesses that he fathered a child and out of cowardice refused to accept them, like a true asshole. Now that they've all owned up to it, gone full circle, they jump into the hole in front of them to escape somehow.
And now the trio survives, because they've got their friend the Sorcerer's Stone with them. They survive this insane drop, open a manhole on the bottom of the floor, that when they pass through this manhole, they jump out onto the street, which should... send them falling straight down. Instead, they are right side up on the streets of Paris in a park by the river. They have truly escaped hell on earth. Scarlet and George hold each other, having admitted that they still care for each other. Zed walks off, alive, but now minus two of his friends. And presumably, he's going off to claim the child he abandoned. When we see footage of Scarlet saying she was never after the treasure, only the truth, we are left to wonder what she will do with her new Philosopher's Stone powers. And that, Roxy, is As Above, So Below.
As Above, So Below, that's it.
So this movie's just Dante's Inferno, huh?
Basically, yeah. It's Dante's Inferno, but also crossed with, as we have determined, Tomb Raider. And a little bit National Treasure, I guess. It's like a horror movie, but it's also kind of an adventure movie, and they're literally solving puzzles and stuff, which is very fun.
See, as a puzzle guy, I love puzzles in video games more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've got a good answer for it yet. I don't know how exciting it is to watch somebody solve a puzzle on screen. It's a problem I heard the movie The Bucket List described as having.
Oh, really?
Where it's like Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson are old men and they are dying, so they're going to go do all the fun stuff they wanted to for their whole life. And I remember reading a review of that movie that was just like, it's not fun to watch somebody do these fun things. It would be fun to go do these things, to be sure. But just seeing somebody do it is not super satisfying. And that's how I felt with all the puzzles in this movie. I was like, man, just this is why it's so hard to do a Riddler movie. Like, I want to just see Batman talk
as
a rat with wings.
Probably one of the reasons why is because, like, a lot of murder mystery things, you're there with the detective solving the puzzle in tandem with them. You have the exact same pieces they have that you've observed.
Yeah.
But with this, it's like, I don't know Aramaic, but I know this character does, so he can decipher it. I don't know Greek, this character does. I don't know about the symbolism of a scarab or something, but this other character does. So it's kind of like, I can totally see where you're coming from, and I also did get a little bit of that feeling, too, where it's like, there's no way I could have solved this puzzle on my own. I have to just watch them do it. They don't linger on it a super long time. Like, they're talking really fast and stuff. I remember there's a section where they have to push a specific stone that is numbered down, and if they push the wrong one, everything will cave in and kill them. So because she explains that, there's a tension there that all the characters are feeling and that you, the audience, are kind of feeling. But, like, in order for her to get to there, you know, you're not really in her shoes in that moment.
Right. There's a long time of her going, like, oh, the ancient Greeks believed these numbers. And if we go halfway through, this is the devil's number. And halfway through the devil's number, it's like they just have this information. And I believe that their characters would have it.
Yeah.
But even as you were talking about it, I was like, oh, that's the solution. Like, we know that George speaks Aramaic. And if she went through a greater struggle to get him to come along with her, like, it was pretty easy. Like, once he was on the mission, he was on the mission. Like, I think that's kind of why, like, heist movies feel kind of exciting, because you're, like, setting up the team.
Yeah, every person is a piece of the team. And, yeah, I think also it's just, like, she wanted him there because she trusts him, and he's been along for her other journeys, even though she screwed him over. So I think part of it is she just wanted him there also. Like, because once he figured out the Aramaic for her at the tombstone and shit, she didn't technically need him for anything else. Later, when they are going through that specific puzzle, I think he might be the one who knows Greek, but maybe she also knows Greek, because she's like a Swiss Army knife. She can do everything. When they're going through that specific puzzle, I think he's like, wait a minute, wasn't this reversed in Egyptian mythology as opposed to, like, Greek or something? And this is a hieroglyph, so you need to do the Egyptian interpretation instead of the Greek interpretation, something like that. So he does, like, correct her from killing them all and stuff. And then, like, he's her motivation and how she realizes, oh, the stone is fucked. And, oh, I need to admit that I care about this person and get over myself. And now I'm the Philosopher's Stone.
I didn't mind that little twist. Yeah, I thought that was, like,
I think it's neat.
Conveyed really well. When she puts the stone back, she, like, wipes away the mirror and looks at herself, like,
yeah, and it's like final twist.
I felt like I bought that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's a neat final twist, and also how it's like, that's how Nicholas Flamel, he did figure it out, but nobody knows, because it is this weird thing where you become the stone. It's not that the stone actually exists as a physical object. That's kind of like a red herring. And so only people who have gone through the process can know. So that's why nobody knows. And I thought that was, I think it's a neat little twist. And also, the potentiality of what she can do after that. She's gained literal superpowers and immortality, as far as we know. So who knows what's in store for her? I'm glad we don't have a sequel telling us what that is, because there's no movie there, really. But it's a cool thing to end on in horror movies, because usually the only thing you're left with is survival. We made it out. But, like, they actually got the treasure and made it out this time.
I would argue that there is no worse person to have this Philosopher's Stone power than this woman, Scarlet.
Yeah, she is, like, really selfish, and it does feel like she sort of makes a change where she realizes, oh, my selfishness is destroying the people around me. Three people have already died. I can't keep doing this. But at the same time, we don't really see her act so much on that revelation, and everything she's shown beforehand makes me think she cannot be trusted. If George got it, I believe he would be much more competent and, like,
sweetie.
Yeah, he feels a lot more empathetic, where I would trust him to do good with his powers. Scarlet, I do not know.
I will say, like, the beginning of this movie where Scarlet is like we open in Iran, where she's like, it's illegal for me to be here. If I get caught, I'm gonna be super murdered.
And they're demolitioning the place she's at, so she'll be crushed if she even makes it, or if she doesn't make it out. So either you're gonna
she's like, nope, I'm gonna keep going.
Yep.
She just pushes and pushes and pushes. Everybody's like, you have to get out of here. She's like, no, I'm not going to get out of here.
She's, like, perfect as an Indiana Jones type, or a Nathan Drake, or a Lara Croft type, like, video game character, or or big grandiose movie character. But, yeah, she's supposed to feel more real, and she does, in a very selfish and realistic way, which is like, man.
Once we got to the George stuff, I was like, this woman is a criminal. Like, the way George was like, hey, I'll make a deal. I'll come translate for you, but I don't want to come to the cave. She's like, okay, got it. And then they get to the cave, and she's like, he's coming. And I was like, no, he's not. He's not.
And he even keeps saying, like, no, I'm not. And it's just, like, kind of helping her. And it's only because the cops intervened and were going to arrest all of them, or beat them up, or both of those things, that he's like, well, shit, now I'm stuck here. And I guess I have to do it, because I'll be arrested again if I don't.
Yeah, I didn't think about how he was getting arrested again. This Scarlet Lady has boundary issues in like a really upsetting way. And I thought for sure her arc was going to be about accepting that other people have autonomy and that it's wrong to force people to go along with it. And that is not the lesson she learns at all. I feel like the emotional catharsis of this movie is really rushed when at the end she's like, oh, I'm the Philosopher's Stone. I just got to say I'm sorry to my dad. Like, that's not what you were dealing with.
Yeah, like her accepting her grief, I guess you could kind of say that her father's death is what made her spiral into this like selfish, self-destructive kind of mindset where she didn't listen to him, she drove him to suicide, but her not answering his call is what caused him to like finally snap at the end when he was considering it, because he was like, well, my daughter doesn't care about me, so what do I have left?
Because we learn very early in this movie that her father behaved this same way, that he was similarly driven to find the Sorcerer's Stone and went mad doing it. So it's like, she's just like, it's learned behavior.
Yeah,
and
that's
like,
true.
The not answering the phone of it all feels immaterial to what.
Yeah,
it felt too easy and wasn't reflective of her behavior throughout that movie.
Yeah, I think in the end, like, it is about her grief. Like, that is a part of it. But I think, yeah, the bigger issue is just how she's treating the people around her and letting that grief affect her.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to believe going through this whole thing would have changed her mind enough, but since we don't get to see what happens afterwards in that way, it's not wrapped up or really addressed in a way it should be.
Can I make a quick pitch to you on how to solve this problem?
Yeah, sure. How would you solve it?
I'm just thinking about this in the moment, so I could be off here. It feels like if Scarlett is occupying the George role, right? If she is somebody who, like, I can help you with this, and George, I'm getting this a little messy. The idea is, she feels like because she didn't act, because she didn't answer the phone, because she let her father go, she is now a recluse. She is not pursuing this. She feels so bad that she did this, that she's like coming, like she's made a shell for herself.
Mm-hmm.
And George or somebody is coming to her and saying like, I need to pull you out of this. I need your help. And she's like,
so she's
more of a reluctant
protagonist, I guess.
Right. Because then she can, like, actually learn about, like, what it means to take action and what it means to, like, literally and metaphorically answer the call.
Yeah.
She doesn't. She's driving forward. Answering the call is not her problem.
Yeah, I think a way they could have
far in the problem.
Yeah, I'd say my idea to fix this would be to keep it the same, except for it's just not the phone call. Or, like, maybe she did, her destructive behavior actively did cause her father's death. So then she has to look at her behavior and reevaluate it there. Like, just don't have the dead father be the thing that is tormenting her down there.
Right.
Because, like, we see it with Zed, the thing that's tormenting him is that he abandoned a child and left them. And then, okay, so that's another thing, too, to kind of address, like, all of these people are essentially being killed in ways that show that, like, they kind of deserved it or something. Like, with Papillon not accepting the fact that he was the one driving the car that killed his brother. So him refusing to accept it caused his demise. But then we have Susie, who is just, like, murdered suddenly and very violently by LaTop. We have Benji, who is, like, pushed to his death by a woman in white, so maybe there's a pass there that you could kind of hand wave to be, like, maybe he was responsible for some other person dying, but we don't really see him being tortured by that or anything, or who that woman is. Mm-hmm. So it feels like the two of them dying doesn't really fit in with, like, the theming and the rules that they've established, unless it's like, I don't know, Susie killed someone really violently one time, and now she's just getting her just desserts for that, I guess. Those are two kind of hanging threads where I'm like, you could have, like, just written a couple of lines or some dialogue or something to, like, make that tie in, maybe, before you showed it very emphatically with LaTop and his death.
Right.
I mean, not LaTop, sorry, Papillon and his death.
It feels like, and we kind of talked about this last week when we were talking about the Borderlands / Final Prayer, where because it's found footage and we're looking at it through a camera, you kind of don't get that, like, subjective perspective that you get.
Yeah.
But this movie does. This is like a dreamlike found footage movie, which is like almost this bizarre contradiction in terms.
Silent Hill in that way too, where it's like these people's inner demons are being manifested physically and torturing them for it. Which is probably one of the reasons why I latched on and was like, this is neat. This is like Silent Hill, the other thing I like. But it is very emblematic of just kind of showing what they're dealing with. So yeah, you can make metaphor reality in the way they've established.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this movie would have been better if it wasn't found footage.
Yes.
If it was just a film.
I think so, too.
We don't have to spend all this time with, now I'm setting up cameras.
Yeah, the only thing that the found footage thing helps is that, one, cool fact, they literally filmed in the actual catacombs. They got, like, the permission of the authorities of
Louis
France.
The 14th.
Yes, Louis the 14th. To be able to do that, so... Like, there's some things that they had as minor props, but for the most part, they were filming in, like, the actual location and were able to use those as props.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I cannot imagine what it was like filming down there because of how tight and claustrophobic it is. So maybe they were like, in order to explain why we can't do, like, these wide, big shots or anything, we're just going to make it found footage. Or maybe it's the budget after trying to get permissions for everything else. Who knows? I'm not sure. But I do know that it was, like... Another fun fact I have here that I got from Wikipedia is that the budget for the movie was $5 million, but it grossed $41 million worldwide.
Wow.
So
that's a profit.
Yeah, so I'm sure the budget was a big part of it, too, how they were able to like get this made to be like, hey, it'll be cheaper, so just let us do it.
It just feels like there is a it feels like it should be a different movie if it's found footage. Like, there's something that feels inherently unfair about it being... And I think that's why, like, in a Silent Hill kind of sense, I like this kind of vibe where things are weird and happening and how much is in my mind and how much is happening in reality. I think that's why it frustrated me more when they are breaking rules in terms of how people are dying and they're breaking rules in terms of what you need to do to survive down here. And it's just like, it feels like you gotta adhere to the rules if you're doing a found footage thing.
Yeah.
Guys.
And I think also because it has like that adventure aspect to it, kind of like this puzzle solving, globetrotting adventure aspect to it, it does feel like it needs to maybe be more bombastic like that. And like, you don't see an adventure movie that is a found footage movie, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of these conflicting vibes.
This movie is kind of in the middle of like, a bunch of genres. It's just kind of sitting in between, and it's not really great at any one of them.
I will say, though, in the process of watching it, it's, like, very fun, and I'm not really thinking about that until afterwards, now that we're, like, kind of, you know, slicing it up to look at it. It's like, yeah, there's actually a lot of flaws here, but, like, the actual experience of watching it was pretty fun. I didn't really find myself questioning this much in the moment, I guess.
I did.
Okay, well... You did, and maybe there's also watching did too.
And the other thing that bothered me a lot about this movie is how rushed the emotion, like the emotional changes are at the end. It's like they're like, oh, we forgot, and then they cram all of the. There's literally a scene where they're like, "What's your emotional arc? I had a son. What's your emotional arc? I left my brother.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd obviously been seeding his brother.
I think
throughout.
They just had too many characters to delve into is the problem, and I think it's because they wanted bodies they could kill to show the stakes or show how the rules are supposed to work. And because of that, yeah, it's to its detriment because then you can't really dig into it because you're spending time on these character deaths and explaining things and then thinking about why that's happening.
Also, one of the worst moments I've ever seen in a movie where George tells Scarlett, he says, whatever happens, whether we make it out of here or not, that week in Turkey was the greatest week of my life. I was like, no, it wasn't. No, it was not.
It was
you were imprisoned,
I mean,
and you talked about it the whole movie,
the end,
how angry you were about it. I was like, unbelievable you just said that.
Well, it makes sense that, like, leading up to it, it was, and then, like, she broke so bad with whatever happened there that we don't know. So it's like, he was all in, loved her, having a great time, then she fucked it up. And it's probably why he even came back in the first place, why somebody who went through that, somebody imprisoning me and leaving me there to rot, I would hate them for the rest of my life. I would never entertain anything they were doing. I would never go along on an adventure with them. But it's because he fell in love with her and loved her enough that he was willing to go even when it was obviously a bad idea.
And again, I don't necessarily mind that as a character choice. That's like an interesting thing to say that, like, I love you so much despite the horror you did. But all of his behavior, the entire movie, has been about how horrible that time in Turkey was. His whole, everything he talked about was about how much he hated her for leaving him in Turkey. He's like, actually, I really like that. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Sorry, man. Why do you think Nicholas Flamel wanted to be buried down here?
For the mystery. He loves a good mystery. Nobody knew this about him when he was alive, but he was like, he had a deal with his friend who he was making a podcast with, Mikey, and he told them, you gotta make my tombstone into this great elaborate puzzle for people to solve, starting with the back of my tombstone that will be above an empty grave that doesn't have a body in it. But my real body, you'll know where to put it, friend who's making this podcast with me. I'll give you the instructions in my will.
Roxy, I literally hadn't considered this is exactly what I wanted you to do for me when I die, is make a puzzle out of my tombstone.
We'll have to do the thing with an empty grave.
The specifics of my body are different.
Well, it was going to be sky burial, but we could do that with part of your body, and the rest of you can have the clues to the Philosopher's Stone, Sorcerer's Stone.
That's a great idea.
Your favorite stone, whichever it is. We'll figure it out.
I have two moments, Roxy, that I just kind of want to brag about that as I was taking notes and watching this movie. Number one, when George first gets his throat bitten out by a stone monster, I wrote down, why doesn't Scarlet just try to heal him with the power of love? And then that's what she does. And the other thing I wrote is that, like, I was like, oh, it was like halfway through the movie. I was like, oh, as they're going down, it's just the flip of it. It would be awesome if at the end it was Reverse City and they have to walk upside down. Like their hair was dangling straight up. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
That's what happened in the movie.
It's very cool how they kind of like play with space in that way. I think they could have leaned into it more and done more with that.
Mm-hmm.
I also, like, do you know about that famous found footage from like the 90s that is like a real thing that they found?
No.
There was like this camcorder.
Oh, in the Paris catacombs, right?
Yeah, in the Paris catacombs.
Okay.
There's somebody who had a like old school camcorder. They were walking through. They seemed to be getting more and more panicked and like lost, where you can just kind of hear them breathing and like freaking out on the other end. They start running and running and running. They seem to get spooked by something, drop the camera, and run away. And so at some point, either explorers or maybe if they were renovating the catacombs or something, they find the camera, but they don't find the person attached to it. And, like, we have no idea what happened to that person. They just died in there, presumably. And, like, this is a real-life place.
I'll tell you what happened! I chainsawed him! I chainsawed him so small he couldn't be found!
Wait, are the Paris catacombs connected down here, Pigbot? Can we go to the Paris catacombs down here?
Are the Paris catacombs scary?
Yes.
Then they're down here.
Well, fuck. Okay, we just gotta make sure we don't run into them then.
Pigbot, you're crazy. This dude's crazy.
He sure is. I've been saying it for years, Mikey. He's just crazy.
Roxy, do you have anything else that you want to say about the movie before you rate it?
No, I think I'm good, Pigbot. We can rate it. I'm cool with that.
Give it a score! Give it a score! Give it a score! Give it a score! Between 1 and 5 thumbs! I'll chop off the necessary thumbs you need!
Okay, I know.
Who's hungry?
You're hungry?
Hi, are you hungry?
Would you be hungry for part of the thumb you can cut off for me so I can make my rating?
Ick, Roxy, what? No, he doesn't want to eat a thumb.
I don't know what he eats. He's a pig bot.
It's not thumbs, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, well, can you still do a precision cut for me? Can you do that? Can I ask that of you?
Sure. What's your rating out of 5 thumbs?
So my rating is 3.75. Can you chop off 25% off the top of this thing?
No problem.
Ah! Oh, God, why is he doing my thumb? Oh, no.
Fuck.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Not Mikey's thumb, you dumbass! I said this one, this extra one I'm holding up here from the basket that you brought last time!
Oh, my bad! Sorry!
Do we need to get you a prescription eyeglasses?
I'm sorry! Let it go!
That's for Mikey to decide, not for me.
Roxy, why did you give it 3.75?
This was an enjoyable movie. It does have some, like, rules things that it does wrong. And I think it got pretty lambasted when it came out. But I had a fun time. I like that there were character arcs and some Silent Hill vibes with the puzzles and stuff. Not a perfect movie, but enjoyable. And there aren't as many horror movies kind of like this that have, like, an adventure-y type of vibe. So, I don't know. I think it's pretty neat. 3.75, but definitely not a 4. What about you, Mikey? What do you give it?
I'm going to give it 2 thumbs up.
Ooh, okay. The rules things were probably too much, right?
A, because I don't want to risk letting Pigbot saw anything.
I think that's smart.
I'm scared of him.
Yep, as you should be.
Also, I didn't love it.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, the things that I love in movies, the character arcs, the, like, interesting ideas. I was actually really dismayed when I found out, like, halfway through, I was like, wait a minute, is this just Dante's Inferno? Like, I know, I've never read Dante's Inferno, but I know the broad strokes. And I was like, oh, so they're not even really saying, like, they're not even really doing anything that new. I was just kind of like, it's a pre-established mythos. No, like, big fun ideas in it. The characters were just very rushed at the end. Again, I hate the idea of going through a character's arc, and at the end they're just like, everybody say your character thing. It's like, I let my brother die. I forgot a kid. And then she's just, like, solving the wrong problem. I didn't love it. Fun scares, cool setup, and then a lot of just stuff happening. So, very cool image at the end. I like the upside-down city. I, again, liked this stone demon who Scarlet embarrassed over and over. I thought that was very funny. But yeah, it didn't quite work for me.
So, Mikey, do you have a question for me about this movie?
Yeah, okay. So we've got a lot of characters who are guilted by something down in the Paris catacombs. Whether or not it was earned is a discussion for before. But what have you done that you would feel enough guilt about that you'd be tortured by it down in the Paris catacombs?
So, kids are stupid. I was a dumb kid, and I did a dumb thing. I'm not sure if it's quite enough to be tortured by guilt in the catacombs forever, but when I was, like, in third grade, I made this little, like, club of friends that I would only let in select people if they did something cool, like if you could do a cartwheel or did a prank or something. And there was this one girl who, like, wanted to be in our club, but she couldn't come up with anything cool. She couldn't come up with anything to get into the club. And so I was like, you're not cool enough to be in the club. And that seemed to completely ruin her school year that year. I can't speak for certain, but she was pretty bummed out. None of the other girls were friends with her because it's horrible kid logic. And you're like, yeah, she's not cool enough. Yeah, she's not.
Not cool. Not in the club.
Not really thinking for yourself there. So we're all just in the cool club and she wasn't. And that was a horrible thing to do in third grade to a child. And I hope she's okay. I don't even remember her name. That's how mean it was, I guess. Or how little it meant to me as a child. Where
I'll
I
tell you
just,
who it was.
Who?
I know who it was, Roxy. That girl grew up to be Michelle Obama.
Wow, can't believe I wished it that bad. How cruel of me. And look where she's at now. She's done something great with her life. Uh-huh. Maybe because I caused such strife in her childhood that she grew past it.
You're a good person.
What about you, Mikey? What did you do to be tortured in the catacombs forever?
I one time stole $100 from my mom.
Oh!
Which is like, not a ton of money, but like, it was, there's like, she had this $100 bill that I put in my pocket and just like had walking around money.
Oh.
And then I went to my friend's house and his older brother was like, hey, for that $100, I'll sell you these 4 video games. And I was like, I do love video games.
Did you like steal it from, like, your mom's wallet or something? Like, or she gave it to you?
No, like, she put it in like a kitchen drawer or something.
So it was just, okay. Like, it was like a for thing later we, or in case of emergency kind of thing.
And I just like knew it was wrong to steal it. And, but I did. And like with the plan to put it back. But then when my friend's older brother was like, hey, why don't you, buy these video games from me? I was like, hell yeah, dude. I love one of the games I do remember very clearly was Tomb Raider.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask. It's very important what games those were.
Yeah. I think it was Tomb Raider and Tenchu Stealth Assassins.
Okay.
Tenchu Stealth Assassins is a game that still gives me anxiety when I play it because I'm like, I know I shouldn't be playing this game. I know I bought it with illegal funds.
Oh, shit. Ill-gotten gains. My goodness.
And when I told my mom that I took it, she like burst into tears.
Did she really? She was like, I have raised a thief.
Yeah.
And now our emergency money is gone.
And then she made me call my grandma and tell her.
Why? Was it your grandma's $100?
No. She was just like, grandma's been going through this with me, and I'm not going to tell her. You need to call and tell her. So I called my grandma and told her, and that made
she
me like-
She wanted to shame you? That is horrible. That is a weird move, Mikey's mom.
Uh-huh. Yeah, listen, my mom's not a great person.
Yeah, that's not okay.
That is absolutely the thing I felt worst about for the longest time. And now, I'd be happy to steal $100 from my mom. I've really grown in that sense where, like, if I saw her around, I'd steal so much money from her and from anyone. I love stealing.
This is not anything that can be admissible in court if should those events occur. Mikey's just joking. He's talking about it in Minecraft. What if he did it?
I really want to steal money from everybody I know.
Mikey, and Jesus have. Christ. Okay, fine.
And will.
But you heard it here, folks. If you know Mikey, watch out for your wallet.
My girlfriend and I do have a bit where I'm like, at some point, I'm going to steal $20 from you. And I don't know how, and I don't know when, but I do plan to do it. And she's like, all right, good luck. And I'm going to do it.
Okay, so she's always going to be prepared. You're keeping her on her toes. So she's...
In theory.
Always going to be on her A game. So, Mikey, we've been talking about a lot of scary things, and Pigbot has been very patient here, even though he's does not seem to be happy with us continuing to talk about this movie.
I feel like I took off Mikey's thumb and I feel bad about it. That's what I'd be tortured about in the Paris catacombs, cutting off Mikey's thumb! I'm sorry, my friend!
He has called you friend. That's big.
That's incredible.
When do you guys get so close, huh?
Honestly.
When did that happen?
We hung out.
You hung out with him without me?
Yeah, we hung out. We played a little Call of Duty.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know how I feel about Shoot Man games. I wouldn't be up for that. Okay.
I knew you wouldn't like it. Well, hey, speaking of Shoot Man games.
Uh-huh.
I've got a palate cleanser recommendation for you, Roxy.
Oh, do you? What is it?
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, we should probably, like... refresh the palate, right? Get out of this as above, so below funk we've been in. Mm-hmm. Talk about a movie, book, TV show, amusement park, overall entertainment experience that we consider to be the opposite of the movie we just watched. My palate cleanser recommendation is Halo.
Wow.
You like Halo, Roxy?
Original Halo for the original Xbox.
Yeah, Halo.
That's literally the only one I've played, the original Halo. Master Chief, our friend Master Chief, there's the Halo rings, there's the Flood, Captain Keys, so, you get a key out of different his brain. Kinds,
you get completely different kinds of rings
uh-huh.
between the rings of hell and the rings of the tangibly built Halo rings.
Yes, this is true.
It does feel like the opposite of hell is science fiction. Like, it does feel like hell is about, like, oh, it's mythology, and sometimes there's just pianos down here because it's in your heart. And then science fiction's like, no, we made this ship to fight the Flood. Like,
it makes sense.
Very,
yep.
Very hard.
Very clear.
There is absolutely, in Halo, there is no questioning as to whether you're doing is right or wrong. There is a man with a gun running forward and shooting aliens. And I would argue the main method with which the heroes of As Above, So Below and Halo interact with the world are opposites in that Halo is only combat and As Above, So Below is only puzzles.
Hey, Mikey, guess what? It's combat evolved, even.
They evolved combat.
Just for
and
Halo.
And you know, having played Pokemon, that you have to do a lot of combat to evolve something.
It's true.
Do you have a palate cleanser recommendation?
Yeah, it was actually also a video game. And kind of more specifically three video games, because I think three of these kind of fill that bill. It is the original Resident Evil games for PlayStation 1, Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3. Your characters who are not in this situation of their own volition, they're just kind of thrust upon what horrors they have to experience. They got guns to fight the demons and monsters coming after them. You know, they're actual tangible enemies. They're not ghostly pianos or burning cars. It's a thing in front of you that you can fight. They weren't, and the puzzles there weren't put by, like, God or the devil, but some rich man who, had an expensive house that you solved puzzles in, or maybe a weird police station that used to be a museum that I guess also had puzzles in it. Anyway, those puzzles make a lot more sense how you get to where you get there. the knowledge to solve them comes from the game itself, not Leon Kennedy knowing Aramaic that you, the player, don't know.
I think we're kind of hovering around the same thing. Like, this movie is loosey-goosey, off in dreamland, and we're like, the opposite of that are hard pins, where we're like, this is what's happening, and this is how we're getting through it.
Yep. Nobody gets superpowers at the end of this either. You just survive and fly in a helicopter, which is kind of cool. You know.
That's very true. Helicopters are cool.
So, Pigbot, those are our palate cleansers. Can we get to haunted plugs, or are you going to make a big thing about it? You still in regret of what you've done to Mikey? You're going to give us a gimme?
I feel sad about it, especially because now we can't hang out and play Call of Duty. I guess all I can do is kill you.
What the fuck? Okay, I guess we're running this time.
Roxy, run!
Okay, we're gonna do haunted plugs. Mikey, do you see anywhere we can duck into along the way, or we'll just do this running today?
Quick, get under that parachute!
Okay! He'll never find us down here. Okay, haunted plugs time. You can follow Scary Basement on Twitter, which is at @scary_basement. We're also on Instagram, which is at @scarybasementpod. And guess what? We're on YouTube 3 days a week, uploading. Go give us a follow and a like and all that jazz. It's at youtube.com/scarybasementpodcast. Mikey, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at @secretblimp. Twitch at twitch.tv/secretblimp. Blue Sky also at @secretblimp.
I am on Twitter, Twitch, and Blue Sky as all the same name, so it's really easy to find me. It's Red Mage Roxy. I stream on Twitch 3 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sundays. Come hang out. Come say hello.
Make sure you give Scary Basement a 5-star review. That helps us out. We want to be helped out.
Please do that. And also, you know what? If you got pals, go tell them. You got friends, go tell them. You got family, go tell them too. Tell them about our podcast. Have them come have a listen. We had fun here, right? Go let them know.
I lost my thumb and I'm afraid I'm going to lose more. Also, check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/supernpcradio. If you sign up for the Super NPC Patreon, you get bonus episodes of Press X to Scream, which is me and Roxy's video game horror podcast, as well as extra podcasts from all the funny video game friends over at Super NPC Radio. Check it out, Super NPC Radio. It's patreon.com/supernpcradio.
And thanks so much for listening. We'll see you now, Mikey! He found us! It turns out when you sit under a parachute, eventually that parachute shows your shape once it has deflated, and he can see us right here. Let's get out of here! See you next week!
Bye! So long, everyone! I'll kill you too!